Hello, hello, hello. Okay.
The thing's on.
Right, yeah. Now. All right. I want to talk about a recent project I worked in collaboration with Golam Hossein, which appeared yesterday on the archive. And mainly I will discuss cosmological observables from the tensor sector of loop quantum cosmology when linear perturbations of the metrics are taken into consideration. And of course, I will discuss related issues and future directions and open problems of these findings. So, I since the previous talks have been so clear regarding the basic foundations of loop quantum cosmology, I won't have a burden to make a lengthy introductory setup. So I can just quote the results, which I will not use even. So, but the starting point in Freeman-Robertson-Walker cosmologies, my starting point will be the ending point of other people, which is the effective Freeman equation, where I'm not really interested in what is the metric content of the universe, since I will talk about tensor modes, which would decouple from not too fancy metric models. And here, the critical density is some object which depends from a scale factor by some power n, and as in order to make notation clear, my n should be the minus capital A of Mary, and I guess also the minus x of Martin. So n in this case will assume values between 0 and 1/2, where n equal to 1/2 corresponds to the improved quantization dynamics. Also, I will fix the Polanyi representation to be the fundamental one. And alpha here is a correction coming from the inverse volume corrections to the effective equations, where lambda is depends on the physical volume according to the particular scheme under consideration, and R is another ambiguity which takes value between 0 and 1. Sorry? R? Alpha. It comes from inverse volume corrections. Oh, this is the physical volume. Okay, since in open models, in open and flat models, the volume of the universe is infinite, you just take a patch, a fiducial patch, where you do your physics, and well, in a sense, yes, but since yes, in okay, this the physical volume, of course, will have the issue of. Yes. Yes. No, it's inside. Because when you take the definition of a Hubble parameter, you see that there is an alpha factor there. I mean, it's sorry. Yes. We can go through a calculation. I've done that myself, so. All right, so before rifles start shooting, and I couldn't have said this too soon, let me say that, alpha, this function alpha is quite complicated, so in order to deal with the next problem analytically, we'll have to simplify it in two regimes, and these regimes correspond to the usual assumption that A is greater or smaller than that alpha star. And however, here there is no issue of scale invariance, because when looking at inhomogeneous models, there is no such freedom. So if I take a given physical volume, this will correspond in the Lu quantum gravity picture to a particular state with a certain number of vertices. If I were to increase this volume, then the state would be different. So it does make sense to consider these two regimes separately. What do you mean?
You can look at the limit of U by Martin Weyl for more clarification. Like the parameters is up, is that they are zero, the n lies between zero and half. Half is not included in these models.
Okay. I want to include also the improved dynamics.
But these are not inhomogeneous models. Do one thing, like, you are confusing people.
Okay, anyway, let me put this straight, that the results that we present will not depend on your choice of n, qualitatively. So you can even just take n different from one half, and the results will be unchanged. So in one regime where we are closer to where we are considering large volumes and we are closer to standard GR, alpha is this thing here, which can be just written in compact form as some correction, where C depends on N, and alpha C depends on both N and the ambiguity R. Here delta is some numerical some constant which in general will depend on the squared Planck length, and its numerical precise numerical coefficient will depend to some extent to different models. But anyway, this in can be thought of as just the area gap, the usual area gap. Now, if this were the case, then C and alpha have these values, where, as you can see, alpha is rather small. On the other hand, when looking near the Planck regime, alpha can be parameterized like this, where again these two parameters depend on n, but not on r. Yes, sorry, also on r, and live in this range of values. Now, these coefficients. So the shape of alpha in these two regimes is rather robust. According to the chosen quantization scheme, by robust I mean that the values of C and Q alpha are do not really vary dramatically for different quantization schemes. So the order of magnitude of these parameters is rather robust. However, one can take natural values. For instance, when n is equal to 1/2, the trivially the in the larger, and r is equal to 1, the larger volume regime will not see any correction at all, and the other parameters take these values, but I won't need to fix even concentrate to this case. So the next step in studying the cosmological implications of Luc-quantum gravity is has been to look at inhomogeneous perturbations on an FRW background, and today I'll talk about only the tensor part of the story, where the FRW metric is perturbed by some space and time dependent tensor. This I'm just quoting the results from the paper by Martin and Golam. One can express the perturbation in canonical variables, which are given by a background homogeneous part plus a perturbation, and these perturbations actually depend on H, and H eventually will be identified with graviton modes. And all the perturbations are canonically conjugate. So one can work out the Hamiltonian equations of motion with these perturbations, and let me rephrase the result in conformal time. The result when only inverse volume corrections are taken into consideration is the following, where alpha is actually is the real alpha is not taken in either of the two limits I've discussed. However, in order to solve this equation, I will have to resort to those regimes, because otherwise the problem cannot be dealt with by hand. Now, to do so, I have also to fix the dependence of the scale factor from a conformal time, and I will take a power law inflation, where P now is not the triad, but it's just a constant, and the commoving Hubble parameter is inversely proportional to tau. Now, there is here a caveat, but let me discuss it later. In particular, one can define conveniently the first slope parameter as follows. And regarding the values of P, during inflation, P is smaller than minus 1, while the de Sitter limit corresponds to P equal to minus 1, that is actually equal to 0. This is why this is called the slower parameter. However, for superinflation, actually P is between minus 1 and 0, and in general, in this case, epsilon will be negative. Now, taking the near-Poincaré regime, one can first redefine the variable as a Mukhanov variable and multiply H times A, and also redefine the time variable as follows. And this is useful because one gets this this equation where nu is just a constant. Now, this equation can be exactly solved in terms of Bessel functions, and here H1 and H2 are the Hankel functions of first and second kind. C1 and C2 actually are two constants which should be fixed by some specific normalization procedure, and eventually we will be able to set the C2 equal to 0, I'll do it from the very beginning, and consider the larger and short wavelength limits of the solution. At larger wavelengths, this is the asymptotic solution. At small wavelength, it is a pure phase.
So this is the connection, so this is without the connection. This is a standard TV?
Through the value of nu, because it depends on Q alpha. And also Z is not the usual conformal time, but it's this new variable, which depends on inverse volume corrections.
The only thing that is coming from loop quantum gravity is this alpha, or this Q alpha depends on something else.
Q alpha is a parameter which enters in the definition of alpha, which alpha is proportional to A to the Q alpha. And does this answer? For the time being, also on the choice of time variable, because then.
That's also from alpha.
Yes. So I'm ignoring Holonomic corrections because I would have a Mukhanov equation would have been different. So in order to normalize the solution, one has to consider to match the short and larger asymptotic limits. And in doing so, one typically chooses a suitable vacuum. So I will stick to the almost universal choice of a Bunch-Davis vacuum, where the short-scale solution is actually an advanced in plane wave. One can formalize this claim by promoting the Mukhanov variable to an operator and expanding it in the usual bosonic creation annihilation operators. So from the commutation relations between the perturbed canonical variables, one gets a commutation relation for U hat, which would be the same as in standard GR, except for the notable difference, but here the right-hand side depends on alpha. By plugging the expansion of the in momentum space of U hat, one gets the Wronskian condition. And this one, when the small scale solution is plugged in, will give you the normalization constant. So the spectrum is defined through this as the two-point correlation function of this fluctuation, and it's evaluated at a particular point called horizon crossing, where perturbations exit the horizon and get frozen afterwards. This condition is, as you can see from the Mukhanov equation, is determined by the fact that the effective mass of this equation becomes zero. So in this case, W equal to constant is a solution. So this gives an expression of K star in terms of the horizon crossing momentum in terms of other variables, which is well defined if P is larger than that quantity. But actually, there is a stronger condition on P, which comes from the fact that we want the z and tau variables to flow along the same direction. Otherwise, we would have some interpretational issues, which I would be happy to discuss in the discussion session. So the tensor spectrum is defined as follows, and after a lengthy calculation, one can see, not even too lengthy, one can see that its dependence is differs from the usual GR by a factor of 1 over alpha squared. And in terms of momentum k, it has this form. So the tensor spectral index, by the its definition, is the logarithmic derivative of the logarithm of the spectrum, the exponent of the tensor spectrum, and has this form. Now, let me pause for a moment and notice that this is not actually what we do observe, because post-inflationary, post-accelerating physics will change the spectrum of gravitational waves. So, in particular, what we observe is this power spectrum, but which is filtered through some other physical processes, which are modelized by transfer function, where here this is a critical energy density, as in standard GR, not to be which has nothing to do with a critical density in the QC equation. F rho is the energy density of a stochastic gravitational background, and F is the frequency at which this background is observed. In particular, one can invert this relation and find that the tensor index depends on the frequency of a given experiment. F naught is some fixed frequency value, and R is the tensor to scalar ratio. The tensor to scalar ratio is the ratio between the tensor amplitude and the scalar amplitude. Now, there are several experiments which can place a bound on the tensor index, for instance, the observation of Pusel timing, interferometers like Ligon future LISA, and also Big Bang nucleosynthesis. For instance, by taking the upper bound for R, which is given by CMB observations, and is of order 0.3, the tensor index must not be too large, and the stronger constraint actually comes from Big Bang nucleosynthesis, so tensor index is certainly much much less than 1. However, if R would be much smaller, its logarithmic dependence would not really change these results, because even if R would be 8 orders of magnitude smaller, then still these bounds would give you an upper bound for the tensor index to be even smaller than 1. Now, can we apply these things to this regime? Okay, in the quasi-de Sitter limit, regardless its stability or not, the tensor index is strongly butylled because it's greater even than 2. In the super-accelerating regime, actually, the tensor index is very close to 2. So again, its butylled is much stronger than the bounds which would be given by these observations. However, so if we took, if we really believed in these bounds, we could claim that this near Planckian phase might have been occurred only at very early times and for a short period. That is to say, it would affect a part, an unobservably large part of a tensor mode. So we would not be able to see this thing. Actually, one could get a scale invariance if P were fine-tuned. However, this could spoil the scalar spectrum, and this can be seen from some toy models in the scalar part. However, there are some issues. The first one is that R could be tremendously small, and then we could fit observations. However, we are not able to know what is R because we do not have we have not computed the scalar sector, and here comes the second problem, is that in this regime anomaly cancellation does not happen in the scalar sector. So there may be even a serious issue here that perturbation theory in this regime does not converge. So the theory is consistently inconsistent in this sense, because from different points of view, we can see that here there is a strong tension. So I will comment later also on this thing. Another issue may be that close to the bounds, the power law evolution may not be a good approximation, because when time goes to the origin, in that case, the conformal time goes to minus infinity, then we would have hit the singularity, so we would have to change, actually, the function dependence of a scale factor. However, near the bounds, A may be considered is almost constant, so that approximation may hold. The only reason why we took a power law evolution is that in that way, we are able to solve the equations. But I agree that this is a thing which could be looked at with more with more suitable backgrounds, but maybe with numerical methods. In the quasi-classical regime, actually, we have much less problems. And the Mukarnov equation actually can be written like this, where I have kept only terms linear in the correction given by the standard GR result, that is linear in alpha C. And so it makes sense to consider a perturbative solution of this equation, where W naught will be basically the standard solution, and which will get some quantum correction. So in particular, one can split this equation in two equations. The first one is the usual Mukarnov equation for gravitational waves, and the second one is the same plus a source term, which depends on the lowest order on the lowest order solution, and of course from the quantum correction, the inverse volume quantum corrections. At large scales, the solution is actually the same as in standard GR, but the normalization is quite different, and this will have some observable consequence. At small scales, the usual plane wave at lowest order is recovered, and the correction can be shown to be of this form, where this factor actually decays in time. And this does make sense, because we would expect these inverse volume corrections to be more and more subdominant, and eventually to give the usual GR result. These conditions can be, this normalization can be found by looking at the Wronskian condition. Horizon crossing is the same as in standard GR from a quick inspection of the Mukarnov equation, and the normalizations large scale solution can be shown to be the following. So this correction, as I anticipated, decays in time. Now the spectrum gets this form, where delta now encodes all of the correction, which were linear in alpha C in the equation of motion, so they are actually quadratic in alpha C. And notice that so the tensoriness gets this correction, which is actually negative definite. So you have, since this correction is typically very small, you will have a mild enhancement of the standard red tilt of the tensor spectrum. All right, I haven't considered holomic corrections, but I don't have time. Let me just mention that they typically subdominate relative to inverse volume corrections. So to conclude, the near-Planckian regime is possibly disfavored by observations. However, there are caveats which should be addressed. And the first thing, I believe, would be to look at non-perturbative formalisms. There are a bunch of them in standard cosmology, sometimes called covariant, delta N, separate universe approach. Actually, they can be shown to be one and the same. And here, it would be interesting to see whether anomaly cancellation happens. On the other hand, the quasi-classical result is not affected by interpretational problems, not even theoretical problems. However, the scalar spectrum has not been computed yet, so we cannot close the set of consistency conditions which are the basic tools in observational cosmology. Thanks.